the scene for me. What is it like to step into this simulated red planet? What are you smelling? What are you seeing?
Well, when we're in full simulation mode, we don't just go outside. We put on a spacesuit or a simulated spacesuit, which consists of overalls and boots and gloves, a heavy backpack that has a battery and fan in it that feeds air through hoses to a bubble helmet. So we are quite isolated from the outside world. And what you feel is through the gloves. What you feel is through your boots. You smell the plastic smell of the interior of the suit, and if you haven't washed for a while, you might smell yourself as well. But you don't smell the dust. You don't smell the rain, if there is any rain. You can hear the wind if it's very windy, but it's muted. Because your head is fully enclosed, even more than you would if you're wearing a balaclava and a hood and so on, it's quite a cozy little microcosm that you're living in. You don't put on a spacesuit so much as get into it, and it then becomes your own little world. And even though it's a very simple, almost costume-like affair, because this is a simulation, not a real-life test, nonetheless, you are isolated, and that makes it feel very much like that you are going out into a hostile environment to explore another planet. It's a very nice, very interesting, and a little bit strange feeling.
Yeah, right. So what's going through your head when you're there? Do you kind of feel like you are... Does your imagination kind of lose you when you think, oh, I'm not on planet Earth anymore, I'm in Mars sort of thing? Do you allow that to happen?
Yes. I mean, there are several things that are superimposed on your perception. First of all, obviously, safety comes first. You've got to constantly think if something goes wrong with the backpack, what emergency procedures I've got to do. So that's a bit like when you're going scuba diving, although not quite so. You're not going to drown or anything like that. You just have to take your helmet off. But you're aware of safety things. You're riding a quad bike, which can injure you very quickly if you don't keep your wits about you. So you can't just sort of lose yourself in the simulation. You've got to be constantly aware of safety features and risks and hazards and so on. Secondly, there is your goal. So usually when I'm going out, I'm a geologist, so I have a specific set of objectives I want to reach. I want to go and look at that ridge over there. I want to look for fossils. I want to look at geological features that tell me how those rocks were formed and how I'm going to sample them and where I'm going to sample them and how I'm going to bring them back to the station. And so all of that is, so you've got the operational overlay in your perception. You've got your objectives overlays. But on top of that, because we are thinking, imagining, creative people, yes, there is a feeling, well, if this was really on Mars, what would this feel like? And you have that that colour to what you're doing. That's always happening in your mind at the same time, which, of course, happens to all of us in real life. We walk down the road and, some of us might be imagining that we're part of some sort of spy thriller or romance thriller or action thriller or something while we're still doing our shopping or crossing the street. I mean, it's part of being human that we have these things going on in our heads the whole time.
And you mentioned you're a geologist. So what sort of qualifications and skills do you need to be a Martian, in quotation marks, I guess?
Well, scientists who go into space on the International Space Station or previously on a space shuttle and even to the moon with Apollo were scientists who had either a master's degree or in some relevant discipline or a PhD. And they
so I wouldn't be able
that
to
their
go
research. Yes, so they're qualified scientists. In many cases, they had previous careers or research into medicine or biology or astronomy or geology, which they then can apply to their particular missions that they're involved in.
And so just explain to me why this simulation is so important for greater research.
Well, Well, there are many things that need to be tested out before we send people to Mars. Some of it's hardware, and the Mars Society and Mars Society Australia is a private organisation. We don't have a lot of money, so we can't really test the hardware. Another thing that needs to be tested is the human system. How do people work together in remote environments? We can do some of that, and there are many other groups doing that. A third line of research, and this is the main focus of our trip to Devon Island, is the operations side of things. How long does it take for us to do simple tasks like walk over to an outcrop and collect a series of rock samples, study it and collect a series of rock samples? We know how long that would take if we were on Earth, but how long would it take while we're wearing these simulated spacesuits with all of the other impediments that involves? So that's sort of an operational side. Also, if we want to set up a small outside structure like a dome, which is what one of our architectural crew members will be doing, he knows exactly how long it takes a crew to do that under normal circumstances, just in their t-shirts or whatever. Okay, how long does that take us to do under simulated extravehicular activity conditions? So this sort of operational research is what enables us to understand how long it takes to do things on Mars, how much work we can expect people to do. Because when people are away from Earth for months and years, they can't work at full pace like they have done on previous space missions, like the space shuttle missions, because you're only up there for a week. You've got to have a schedule. You've got to make sure you don't overwork, both on a daily basis and on a weekly basis. You've got to take time off. You've also got to do the essential things like housekeeping and maintenance and engineering work. And so the balance of all of these things is what we're trying to find out in our simulation. So, for example, last year when we were in Utah with the same crew in a similar station, we found that we could go on a science EVA perhaps two, occasionally three times a week. When we're in the Arctic, we'll be following that up to see if we could perhaps increase that, or whether, even though it's a different environment, that the amount of time that we can devote to going outside and doing science is about the same amount. That will help us to know, what to expect when we go to Mars. When we go to Mars, will people be doing an EVA to explore the environment every day, or will they only be going out once a week, or perhaps even less? So this is unexplored territory. On the International Space Station, people are going on EVAs about once every 6 months, twice every 6 months, essentially to do maintenance work and occasionally a bit of science. Because on the International Space Station, all of the research happens inside. But when we go to Mars, we're not going there to sit inside habitats and look out the windows. While there'll be some research inside the station, 90% of the objectives of going to Mars involve going out there and looking for signs of life, past or present, studying the geology, looking for resources that can help sustain human presence on the surface, like material we can make structures from, such as bricks, looking for water that we can use, and so on. And this means we've got to get out there into the real Martian world and study it. And how much work we can do at what rate is sort of questions that we're trying to answer with the expedition.
I can totally see why you do it. It's so fascinating. And thank you so much, Jonathan, for joining us here on The Daily.
Very glad to be talking to you.